All right, well, welcome to a remote version of Q's Tips. This is Q, and we're down in South Carolina with a boy named Tsunami.
Hello.
And Punk Blocker.
Hola.
And Mouse.
Hi.
And they're all a group of derby photographers, and basically we're going to talk a little bit about derby photography and a whole lot about derby everything tonight. I also have two dogs here, Roxy and Hobie. And if you hear squeaking in the background, that's Roxy, and she's nervous about being on the radio, evidently.
Yes,
the reason you're not hearing the intro music, because we're having some technical difficulties. So I could do, welcome to WDRBY and Q's
Ta-da!
Tips, da-da-da-da-da-da, but I'm not going to do that. Anyway, so welcome to the show. If you need to get a hold of me, my name is Electrocution. You can reach me at electrocution@thecarolinarollergirls.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Renee Q McHugh, because Facebook stole my name. Anyway, I will not let them forget it. So we have a lot of questions tonight. I collected some questions from people about derby photography.
Mm-hmm.
Because how long have you guys been in derby and doing photography?
I don't remember. I've had too many concussions.
Oh, shut up.
Well, we've been derby for, it's about 9 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess Punk has been doing derby for that long. And I guess I've been doing derby photography for that long. And I guess photography in general for longer than that.
Very nice.
But I guess I will. Last time we were on, we did talk about sort of our derby origin story and our photography origin story. But I'll just very shortly say here that derby made us become better photographers, because derby photography is hard.
Yeah, it is. It's not easy. I think I see people doing derby photography and I see what they put up on Facebook and I'm like, were you watching a game? You know, like, or were you looking at people? You know, I find that some photographers concentrate on glamour shots or faces and don't really seem to pay attention to the action of the game, or they miss the action of the game. They get a lot of, like, it looks like people are standing still, you know?
Yeah. It's lots of different types of shots are great. You know, still photographs of the people on the sidelines doing wonderful stuff on the sidelines is awesome. That's actually something that I need to work on.
Mm-hmm.
Getting more of those, because I'm primarily an action photographer.
Yeah,
that's my thing. But anyway,
what kind of photography do you do, Punk? I mean, when you're taking pictures, do you look at faces or do you look at action?
I think I do both, more because a lot of times when I'm taking pictures, I know a lot of the people that are playing.
Mm-hmm.
So I also try and capture a little bit of that person while they're playing the game. Maybe in the facial expression or the action of the moment, I think.
Yeah. One of the things I've told you before is that I try to capture some type of interaction between players, some type of story going on, whether that be a hit, whether that be players looking at each other, but there's got to be some story there for me to make the photograph interesting.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Mouse, you're new to derby photography in a way. You've been dragged around every derby games since you were five, right?
Yep.
So, what do you look for when you take pictures? Besides dogs in your face, what do you look for?
You know.
What pictures do you like to take?
Actually, one of my favorite pictures she took is she actually caught Lewis and I at a boat that we were at, and I was warming up, and Lewis was setting up the lights, and his hand is on the flash as it's going off, and I'm in a dream state skating around the track. I think that's one of my favorite ones, but I'm also in it, so that doesn't necessarily
count.
That
helps, right?
Right.
Do you think you like to take, like, what's going on behind the scenes? Okay, it's all right. You don't have to talk. You know, everybody remembers being 14, right? So,
and she is called Mouse for a reason.
She is called Mouse for a reason. All right. All right, so some of the questions that people asked, I wanted to let y'all put together. One of them is, what makes you keep coming back to derby? You've been in it for 9 years. What makes you keep coming back?
for me, I guess it's the relationships with people. And I love the game.
Mm-hmm.
I love the challenge. And I love, I think mostly it's the relationships you form with people from all over the world.
Right.
I mean, I've been in other countries and played with other teams, and I mean, it doesn't seem to matter that, you know, from thousands of miles away, there's still, it's just the same
mm-hmm.
kind of atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Everybody's welcoming, and it's hard to walk away from that, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, for us, it's an extremely positive social interaction, and those
mm-hmm.
are, and those are great, and we look forward to it. You know, obviously, you know, if there's too much of it, you get tired of it.
Yeah.
But
are you an introvert?
Really? How could you tell?
Because I am, and I need breaks from people.
Yeah, and you know, one of the nice things about this time of year is that there's been, you know, we generally at this point in the year have been having a lot of derby activity. And but it's about time for break. It's about time for you know, winter break. And by the time January or February rolls around, it'll be time to get back into it, because we'll be missing it by that time.
Yeah, how long do you think you're gonna stay in it?
That one I think is more about how much longer my body can handle handle it. I'm not playing as competitive as I used to, so it's not quite as difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still challenging.
Mm-hmm.
There's some days I get out of bed and I'm like, oh, that's it. It's over. But then, you know, you put skates on and you're like, ah, it's not over yet.
Do you think you would continue to photograph derby if you weren't in it?
Probably at least for like the local teams that
mm-hmm.
I'm friends with. If they asked me to, I would definitely do.
Well,
it
consider that we ask you to all the time, so letting you all know that CRG would love to have you guys all the time. So how about you, Lewis? Would you continue if Punk?
Yeah, I think so. I think simply because as Punk said, we have built up lots of social contacts over the years in the derby community. And you know, whether Punk is skating or not, I think maintaining those contacts and photographing, you know, awesome action is fun. So
I think he just said he would go without me.
I think that's what I just heard. All right, next question. What has changed in your photography since the game of derby is changing? I guess that's because some, you know, back in the day you could wait for that big hit or whatever.
Yeah.
So what did you used to rely on to get good photos before, and what do you rely on now?
There's, you know, I'll start off. There's a couple things. When we started the derby, you know, 8 or 9 years ago, you know, you were looking for those big hits, because
mm-hmm.
derby was about the big hits, sending people flying, stuff like that. And I know I would wait down at the, I guess, turn two or turn four,
mm-hmm.
and just sort of just be waiting at the ends for those big hits to happen at the ends, because that's where the action happened. That's where people would go flying. That's where the great photographs would come from.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, I find myself migrating a lot more towards turns one and three,
right,
and looking down the straightaway, because
right.
the action is actually happening. All of the interesting stuff is happening as the players are coming down the straightaways.
Sure, that's the blocker's favorite place to hit, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, and stop the jammer, and that's where the jammer
mm-hmm.
has to make that decision
mm-hmm.
what they're going to do to get around a wall.
Yeah. And so me as a photographer have had to modify what I'm doing simply because the game's been changed. And I think that's actually really interesting. You know, it keeps it interesting for me, having to keep up with the new strategies and figure out what's interesting in the game now and what do people want to see.
Cool.
I think it's a little more challenging now too, because people are grouped together more now
right.
than they ever used to be.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, trying to find that one intense moment when everybody's in a scrum
mm-hmm.
is a little bit more of a challenge. But I think you're right. Turn one, I still, if we go together, he's normally in turn one and I'll go in turn two, because
he takes over.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's got the lights, so he's allowed to take over. I normally shoot with natural light. So.
Yeah. So, okay, that's a good question. Do you like shooting with your... I know this. You've changed mm-hmm. your mm-hmm. methods over the years, and
right.
you're now using a lot more flash,
right.
stuff like that, lights in mm-hmm. general. Do you like them better, or do you miss the au naturel?
If I like being able to control the lighting,
mm-hmm.
Because if you can control the lighting, you can be a lot more in control of like what kind of photographs that you actually get.
Yeah.
And so I just prefer that because I can control, you know, how much light, where the light is, and things of that sort.
Mm-hmm.
Now that being said, I would, you know, over the years I've shot ambient, I've shot with speed lights, I've shot with studio strobes, and I would like to think that I can walk into any venue and whatever the situation there is, with, you know, if I can set up my strobes, great. If they say no strobes, you know, I would like to think that I'd be able to function there and get good photos as well.
I'm trying to think of anybody. So when the game's going on, I don't notice anything that's really going on outside of what's on the track.
Right.
I don't notice if someone's screaming at me. I don't notice if the announcer says my name. I don't notice the lights, honestly. Once
right.
I start playing, I don't even think about that stuff. So I'm wondering if there would be a team or a group that would say
there,
no.
Well, and we're taping this while Champs is going on.
Yes.
And actually, one of the things that's happening in Champs, because of the... TV cameras, they are restricting off-camera flash.
Oh,
and so
okay.
they're not completely banning it, but
they're saying, be careful.
You can only put
it.
Them in these places.
Yeah.
And I've seen posts from my photographer friends who are saying I'm only allowed to shoot with the strobes when my team's playing. Every
mm-hmm.
time else, I've got to do ambient.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they're trying to cut down on the amount of extraneous light
mm-hmm.
for TV, which I understand, and it's all the more reason to be able to walk into a situation and say, if I got my lights, great. If I don't, I know what happens.
Well, that's
or
good.
I know how to work on it.
That's good.
But you do have to, if you aren't bringing your own light, you've really got to have some really fast class. Some really, wide aperture lenses.
I was gonna say you just said boogity boo to me.
Yeah, you've got to have those really wide lenses that have a large opening for light to get in.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot of it out there.
You're talking
and
about like 2.8.
Exactly. You know, the Roller Derby Photographers group is called f/2.8.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's neat.
It's it's called that for a reason. And it's. Unfortunately, stuff like that's not cheap, and so that's where we say it's not about the equipment, but in some cases it is.
It's all about the equipment. That's what I've heard.
well,
and your lens length.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they say.
That's what mm-hmm. they say. All right. Next.
I'll take your word for it.
Nice. Next question is from Kat. And she asked Punk, because Punk, you play, you've coached, and you've reffed, and you've also been a photographer. She says, Punk, would you ever consider coaching again?
That's like saying, Punk, will you coach again?
I think that's what it was.
Yeah. I really enjoyed coaching, but I really think that you get to a point where you're not growing anymore, the team is not growing, and it's time for someone else to shine. And to do that job, and that never happens if you continue to coach. And so
you need to make room for someone to step up.
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if it's the same person for a long period of time, it just the team doesn't grow. And so, I think I'm a teacher, so it's a natural skill that I have, and so people are comfortable with me doing it. But there are other good people out there that
have good ideas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think. Kat is one of them. That
so Kat
has the potential
maybe
to
you
be
should
a
coach.
Good coach. She's got great skills.
Yeah, skills.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. Right back at you, Kat Von Kill.
And Kat Von Kill is a Punk Blocker's teammate, so that's why it's funny. Anyway, next question. Mickey Mouth Hess says, what is their favorite way to photograph derby? Is there something particular they look for? So I think that's a good question about what do you look for when you're going through the photography moment or when you're going through your photos after.
I know I always look for at least one like wow action shot.
Mm-hmm.
Like something that I haven't seen anyone else do, or just a moment like somebody flying through the air, like you said. But again, it, to me, it's back to relationships. And I don't know, that's just my approach to photography in general. I look for that in people when I'm not shooting derby. So I think it just carries over into derby.
Yeah, it's, in addition to that, I agree with all that. I look for interesting faces.
Okay.
People making interesting derby faces.
He just
He's
said,
got good a couple of views.
Derp because, faces.
Well, I mean, not just derp faces, but faces which are showing the emotion of the moment, because that tells a story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really awesome there, if you can tell a story.
One of my favorite pictures that you've taken is one of Q hugging me to stop me from screaming at the refs.
Oh, I love that picture.
I mean, it's... You see that picture, and if you don't know what's going on, you're like, what's happening there?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you want to know the story. So yeah, it's awesome. And
I'm like, don't kill anybody, don't kill anybody.
Yeah, and the sometimes you know especially when you're at the end of the track where all the pack is down at the other end,
right.
They're not moving very fast,
right?
And so all you get to see is the jammers coming by. You know, I'm happy to take a photograph of the jammers coming by. I try to time it so I get the crossover step, and
mm-hmm.
You know, if I can get the ref in there too, you know, signaling at the same time, that's a bonus. And so I mean, I'll make do with whatever's in front of me. But yeah, it's something that tells a story, some type of interaction, some type of emotion that makes a photograph interesting.
I gotta tell you, one of my pet peeves as a blocker is that, and you're not one of these.
I know what you're gonna say, because I'm gonna say he follows jammers.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
we don't care about them speed skating.
Right?
Go and mm-hmm. show me what's going on in the pack. And
come down to my end.
Yeah, I know. I know, but I'm just saying what I see a lot, even during D1s, and I haven't seen any champs footage today, which we will be changing soon. But I haven't. They still follow the jammer. Like, they'll follow the lead jammer for a second or two, and I'm like, nobody cares, she's skating.
I don't know, though. I think that's the derby mindset. Everyone follows the jammer.
Drives me nuts.
Jammer.
It's and I think that is a symptom of how derby has changed over the years, in that if the jammer is not around, there's a lot less action than there used to be.
Oh, I don't know about that. See, as a blocker, I feel that it's different now, that there's way more action. Like, people are doing and thinking more and trying to get into different situations more. Whereas, back in the day, if someone got out, you were just kind of like, derp.
Well, you know, I think that may be, and that may be actions going on in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm happy to photograph that. And if you take a look at my photos, I do post a fair amount of photos of the blockers, you know, getting in their walls and things of that sort, but I think gone are the days where, you know, I could be, the jammer could be on the other side and the blockers would be just wailing on each other. So that those days are gone.
It depends. I mean, it depends where the jammer is. So if my jammer's coming in first, I'm wailing on a blocker because I'm trying to get that blocker knocked out of bounds, or I'm trying to get a point.
And that I am happy and I'm eager to take a shot.
But if my jammer's not coming in first, I'm rushing for the front, and that is going to be some serious action. And I think a lot of photographers forget that there is a pack happening, regardless of whether there's a jammer in it or not. So, but I see it. I mean, I even see it in the coverage of the actual live coverage. You see a moment where they're like, "There's a jammer."
Mm-hmm.
You're like, but there's another jammer still in the pack. I want to see what that pack's doing right now.
Right.
I want to see what the blockers are doing in reaction to that jammer leaving first.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it's like any sport, though. They follow the points.
Yeah.
Like, wherever the points are going to come from, that's who the camera follows.
I agree. I always say that the jammers are footballs. So who cares what the football is doing once it leaves the pack?
Ouch.
Like, no offense, but that's
poor
what they
jammers.
Are. Poor jammers. They get lots of glory. All right, next question. What camera settings do you use to film derby? As far as aperture, ISO, and shutter speed, that would be a good question from a photographer. That's what this person said.
Well, I guess that's different because you use flashes. I don't use flashes. So,
okay.
I mean, there's not one setting. For me, I don't even set my camera until I go into the... Oh, my God. My dog just farted. It's absolutely horrible.
She did.
Oh my gosh, I think she ate something that's dead. Oh,
and she's sitting right next
I'm
to me.
Sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
What are we talking about? Kevin's thinking. I think my eyes are watering. Oh.
You're talking about aperture, shutter speed, and ISO.
Okay, so it depends on the venue. When you walk in the door, you're immediately going to assess, you know, what...
Oh, crap, how can I shoot in this
Okay, place? So here's a good question. Right. Dorton is very bright, so what do you guys
That's
do?
That's one of my favorite places to take pictures.
I knew that would be.
It's very interesting light in Dorton.
Okay.
Even when it's dark outside and it's light inside, they still have really good lighting.
Yeah.
So do you find that it's good lighting when you don't have flash?
Yeah.
So, do you find it annoying because you have to like change your lights to fix it or whatever?
He still uses. I mean, flashes always help.
Yeah. It's if where flash it gets problematic sometimes is if the venue is bright enough, like Dorton is sometimes, that your flashes have a hard time overpowering the ambient light, and if that's the case, I may just go ambient.
Okay.
When we were at playoffs, I'm trying to think, in Charleston, West Virginia, last year, the ambient light in that venue was high enough that it actually made it a little bit difficult to overpower it with the flashes and to get to be able to control the light. And so I shot a lot more ambient that year than I usually do. Going back to the caller. I'd say the caller's question.
Showing your age.
Going back to the emailer's question. If I'm shooting ambient, generally I'm going to have the aperture down around probably 3.2, if I can get away with it, or 3.35, not wide open because it gets a little soft.
When you mean soft, is it just like the blur? Is there a blur?
The pictures are not as sharp.
Okay.
If the aperture is wide, you do get a nice shallow depth of field there. You can focus on one person and have everything else blurry. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a challenge too if you don't hit the focus right on that one person.
Exactly. And with people crossing in front of you all the time, sometimes that's difficult. So
I've seen the ref pictures that like ruins a really awesome shot. Pack ref goes whoop by, and then you see a ref's butt.
So if I'm shooting ambient, the aperture is going to be fairly wide open, and I'm going to try to get the shutter speed as high as I can, at least 320, 400. If I can go higher than that, great.
Okay.
And generally, auto ISO.
What does ISO stand for?
ISO is basically the sensor gain. It stands for
International Standards Organization.
International Standards Organization.
There you go.
Which is how they used to grade film.
Yes, I figured that's what it was. I remember the film.
So when they made the sensors, they just used the same system.
Okay.
Exactly. And it's just sort of the gain on the. It's sort of like the volume on your TV. It's the gain, which if it goes up too high, can get a bit noisy, a bit grainy, so you don't want to get too high depending on your camera.
Okay.
But that's him. I don't ever put it on auto because I don't like not having control.
You're a control freak.
Right. I am a control freak. Uh-huh. And so,
shocking.
Yeah. So I will compensate. I take pictures and then compensate for what I don't see. So if I have to bump up the ISO, I will, or slow down the shutter speed, I'll do that too.
Interesting.
I'm happy to let my camera choose that in most situations. In some situations, it doesn't do a good job, so I go to manual as well. But in most situations, I'm fine with it.
I've never had any luck shooting with shutter speed.
And
interesting.
So,
priority.
Now, on the other hand, if I'm not shooting ambient, if I got my flashes out, then I generally am at aperture of 4.5 to 5, which is a little bit smaller. So I'm putting light on the subject, so I don't need as much light coming into the camera. I mean, there's more light there.
Mm-hmm.
Which also allows more of the picture to be in focus as well.
Exactly. So I don't have to, I can get like an entire pack in focus maybe, and still keep the audience behind them out of focus, which is very cool.
Yeah.
To be able to sort of isolate your subject. And then of course if you got flash, you have to you can only go up to probably about a 200th of a second in shutter speed. It's just a little limitation of the camera.
Very cool.
Yeah.
What biggest mistakes you see photographers, the first time Derby photographers making, I guess, in pictures that you see? Not that they're like out there with the camera reversed on themselves or whatever, but I mean, like, you see their
eyeballs.
Right.
Seen that.
We've seen that. No.
But I mean, you see photographs people put up. I'm not saying names, just like, what do you see that they make mistakes on, I guess, or could improve on? How's that?
Finding the right spot to shoot from is important to begin with. I mean, if you shoot and you're down the straightaway, but you're only shooting people that are passing you, like perpendicular to you, then they're going to be blurry unless you've got an incredibly high shutter speed. That and focus, so I would say, were the two rookie.
Yeah, and that would be a case of probably not knowing your camera well enough and not knowing what settings you have to have it on if you're messing up the focus. You know, for me, I always say one of the first things you need to do for any sport, and we photograph all sports. I mean, I photograph all high school sports around here. And you have to know the sport. You have to understand the sport, and you have to understand when to take the shot and where to take the shot and as Punk said, where to be to take the shot. And I think people coming into Derby, especially people who haven't seen it before, don't know where they need to be. They don't know when is a good time to take the shot. So they just randomly take
just
shots.
Just taking pictures.
Exactly.
Hoping was it shoot and spray or whatever it is?
Spray and pray.
Spray and pray. Yeah. There you go.
And they would be getting those shots that you were talking about with just people standing around. Which you know, it's fine. But
I guess the rookie move with that would be to post every single one of those shots. You've got to learn to do is look through, and
that's
you might have 500 shots, but you should only really pick your 20 best.
You know, and when we started Derby Photography, I was definitely guilty of that. I posted, you know, 400, 500 shots of a game about, you know, every time. And I've learned to say, I don't need to post that many shots because half of mine, well, actually probably about 80% of mine are crap. And the world doesn't need to see them.
I got to tell you, as a player, especially, oh my gosh, and I know we've talked about this before, especially with rookie games, like people that are new to Derby. Every shot you're in, it doesn't matter if it's like completely blown out, overexposed, you're just standing there, there's half of your face in the frame, you're like, I was in a game, I love it, I was in, you know, it's like the best thing in the world. You're like, I have proof.
Right.
Oh, God, she farted.
Why did we feed this dog?
I don't know, but it's terrible. Anyway,
yeah.
And she smiles when she does it.
I know,
which is
she's
terrible.
Like, look what
look
I just
what I
did.
Sorry.
Yeah,
but I mean...
Know. I know. I completely understand because you know today I saw a shot by Ken LeBlue, who's a photographer in Florida, that he took at playoffs when we were down there in Jacksonville, and I happened to be in the background of this shot that he shot of the Jacksonville
logo. You're
like, yeah! I'm like, yeah, it's a great photo.
Yeah,
you know,
and that's exactly how we feel. I mean,
what are you talking about? All the nerdy Derby photographers, you all take pictures of each other. It becomes a competition.
It does. It's sort of a creeper competition.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
All right, next question. I thought this was a pretty funny question because we kind of talked about this last time. But Jeremy Johnson and a couple other people sort of, I kind of made it into one big question. So do you see a lot of naughty bits? And Jeremy Johnson asked, or boobs, you know, if one slips out or is pulled out from a teammate, smile emoticon. I mean, do you get nudity on your shots? Because I'm sure it happens.
Yeah,
we do it.
Do we post them?
No, you don't. But, I mean, does it happen often? I guess that's the question.
Not so much now when people wear in uniforms, so they're designed for the sport.
Right.
So it doesn't happen that often. But there was one in the last game I was in where one of my teammates grabbed the top of my shirt and it almost made my boob pop out. So,
yeah.
I mean, it just happens.
Yeah, I completely agree. It used to happen more, but it never really, you know, boob shots never happened that often.
It's like, darn it!
I mean, I remember a couple that I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
I've heard the infamous jam out with your clam out situation.
Yeah.
I heard that somebody didn't wear the right appropriate underwear and fell and was wearing a skirt.
Okay. Have had that. I think butt shots are a lot more, well, for me, a lot more prevalent because people are like pulling on stuff like that. And occasionally they pull and it shows a butt cheek or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it happens.
But yep. Lewis is always the consummate gentleman. If he thinks in any way that it's not appropriate and he wouldn't mm-hmm. want it posted, he would call me in.
Yeah.
And I would say post it, and they would know not to post it.
Because Punk thinks all of that's hilarious.
But yeah, I mean, as something that you have to, you know, get used to as a sports photographer is that there will be wardrobe malfunctions, and it's you know, basically you just say, oh, that's interesting, and move on.
There is one that you have to correct all the time, and that's when people wear old spandex.
They wear black, the old yes. black spandex, right?
And it's yes. see-through when the flash yeah. hits it, and you can see your underwear or lack mm-hmm. of underwear, and mm-hmm. it's not flattering. So at least buy a new pair once a year. That's yeah. your public service announcement.
And wear black, underwear. Black underwear.
Oh, yeah, please do, because I remember being in a game, and Nura pulled my pants down, and right. I was wearing big old granny yep. panties, but they were tan. And everybody's like, I saw your butt. I'm like, my butt is not that color.
It's much whiter.
My butt
Let
is
me
very
show you.
White. So, yeah. And I just happened to wear those because I was like, well, they're full coverage. You know, nobody's mm-hmm. going to see anything if something happens. And then the next year, I was skating at Battle of the All-Stars, and I wasn't wearing any underwear. And I got pulled down on live derby. That was no fun. Oh, yeah. Now I have two dogs. Oh, good.
Well, that mm-hmm. one doesn't fart as much.
That's
though.
Good. All right, but. Next question. Jennifer Nadeau says, how can you stop the exploitation of skaters' photos on the internet by creeps? Not you personally, but how can we as a community,
how
I think.
How can we?
Yeah.
That's, I'm going to unfortunately say it's impossible on the internet.
Yes.
Because once something's on the internet,
it's there.
It's there. Anyone can see it. Anyone can do whatever they want with it. It may not be legal.
Right.
If someone does something which is illegal, yeah, I'm personally definitely going to go after them.
Right.
But if someone is, you know, watching, looking, if, you know, on the places where I post my shots,
mm-hmm.
I find, you know, I post all my derby shots on Flickr.
Right, right.
And one of the things I find, you know, fairly often is people going around and favoriting shots
mm-hmm.
so that they can have them in an album.
Mm-hmm.
And every time someone favorites one of my shots, I go and take a look at that person. And if their favorites are full of butt shots or something
Ew.
Like that or worse,
yeah.
I zap block them.
Neat.
You know, I mean, that's
saving the day.
Well, that's not doing much. I mean,
it's doing what you can.
It's doing what you can.
Right.
It's so that my shots aren't showing up in someone else's favorite list.
Right.
I mean, but, I guess the skater can, to a certain extent, help that. If you don't want your picture posted, then mm-hmm. you just tell the photographer. And,
yeah.
I mean, that would be
so
another
hard,
issue.
Though.
Yeah. I can't think of anyone who's asked me not to.
Although I saw this really cool thing on Hawaii 5-0, so it must have been true. But they had these little infrared lasers around their neck, and mm-hmm. so it completely, like, you couldn't see their face on camera.
I've seen this, like, so, anti-paparazzi.
Yeah, so you just sew that into your
like
uniform.
That.
Oh, well, we'll have to get those.
And you'll be
I'm
a
sure
big shiny.
I'm sure they're not expensive.
Big shiny
though.
Face
oh,
that
no one
can see. There's your answer. That's how you stop.
Well,
it.
I mean, and it seems like it's becoming either it's become more of a problem, but I doubt it because I've seen it
mm-hmm.
before.
Yeah.
I think people are more aware of it now that there are creepers
yeah.
out there,
right.
and the sport's become a little more popular, and you get a little more creepers. I think when we have this whole DNN thing,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be. I mean, not DNN. Sorry, ESPN3. That's
right.
going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think we might have even more creepers. It's just
yeah.
the way the sport is.
And
I hate that.
That's actually something that I think a lot of some teams have had to deal with, and I think that all teams should think about,
mm-hmm.
is that you get people coming into your venues with cameras,
yes.
for the express purpose of shooting, you know, some type of shot which these skaters would be uncomfortable with, and the team would be uncomfortable with if that was presented as the team, all of these butt shots or something else.
Well, I mean, and it's funny because it turned out from, I remember 4 years ago when the biggest concern was, oh, don't take photographs of injuries, you know, the skaters being injured, and there would be the wall of refs or the wall of skaters
right.
around an injured skater, because there would be people,
mm-hmm.
you know, people that didn't know better, or people in the crowd, whatever, taking pictures, and you were like, stop, you know, what are you doing? Some players are okay with it, some players are not.
Mm-hmm.
I personally, if you know, I would want that documented as a person.
I always ask for pictures.
Yeah. I want to know, you know, what happened or what was going on or, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, when I take pictures of injuries, I always contact the player first and say, hey, got this photo.
Do you want
Do you want it? Do you want me to deep six it? What do you care about? What do you feel like? And most of the time, all the time I say, hey, can I have a copy of that? Mm-hmm. I want it for me. A lot of time they say, hey, that's cool.
Oh, yeah.
I'll post it. You know, I mean, for some, I've shot the career-ending injuries of two or three players I can think of. And they've wanted that out there. So say this was it for me. And they want people to see that. But not everyone is the same. And so I try to be sensitive to that. And if someone says, I am uncomfortable with that being seen publicly, I'm fine with it never being seen again.
Yeah. I mean, I think I'd want it just because I kind of keep a whole, like, that's almost like a photo album of what I'm doing with my life, because it's been 7 years of my life. I'd want all of that. It sucks. I mean, I've had pictures of me being injured. It's no fun. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh, okay. You know, that happened, and I can separate myself from that time period and move on from it. It's interesting. All right, so we got a whole bunch of questions from Mecca.
All right.
Hi, Mecca.
How's all right. Arizona?
Arizona. All right, so for both of y'all, have you ever been taken out by a skater while you're photographing?
I have not.
It's been a while since I've been taken out by a skater. I've been taken out by a ref a couple times recently.
Were you on the inside or the outside?
I was on the, both.
Okay.
A couple times on the inside. Mm-hmm. You get run over by a ref who's doing their job and paying attention to the action, which they should be.
Mm-hmm.
And occasionally they'll be going backwards through and they'll just go through your box.
Mm-hmm.
And
nobody goes through my box.
No.
Just saying.
So now I'm turned red.
And so that's something that especially when I'm shooting on the inside, in the center, I have to be aware of.
Right.
I actually just bought a new rubber lens hood to go on the end.
To
protect the end of my lens. I used to have a plastic lens hood, but which was fairly hard.
So you had a hard lens hood.
Oh my god!
I had a hard lens hood. Yes,
where is this going?
Now it's soft.
I just bought a rubber one, which is a lot softer. So when the refs, run into the end of my lens, it will neither hurt them or
your lens.
The lens.
I would glue spikes to mine.
All right.
So,
has your equipment ever been taken out by a skater? Like since you use lights now, has anyone ever been in a? It seems like you put them far enough away that's not an issue.
I try to put them out.
A kid took out something once.
It's not skaters. It's the spectators. You're absolutely right, Punk. I've had lights taken out by drunk spectators. I've had lights taken out by kids.
Kids.
Yeah, and
our
so,
kid is good.
Yeah, your kid's fine.
And so, especially when I bring the studio strobes in, which are fairly they're pretty durable, but they're pretty expensive.
I was gonna say, how much are those run?
Those run several hundred dollars a piece.
Okay, and a kid took one out.
And luckily those are fairly durable. Now, speed lights, the smaller ones that you see people use on their cameras, if one of those goes and hits the floor, it's probably done for.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had that happen a couple times with kids or drunk spectators. And so, I either have to make sure it's completely out of the way,
mm-hmm.
or it's completely strapped, it's secured, which is better, but sometimes it's not possible with the venue.
Right. Absolutely. It just depends where you are, right?
Exactly. But now you'll set it up away from people as well.
Exactly.
Which is smart, I think.
Sometimes it's helpful that, some teams don't allow spectators to be over on a certain part of the track.
Exactly.
So like Cape Fear has their setup so mm-hmm. the the one straight away.
He's always got it behind the scoreboard. There,
yes.
Right.
And that's why I generally default to shooting from that area, mm-hmm. because I know that
it's
that
safer.
My equipment's safer. I've got free rein as to where I'm going to go. Of course, I mean, that on the other hand, sometimes I say, you know, I'm tired of shooting from turn, I guess, 4 over here or turn 3. I want to go shoot from turn 1 or 2, and so I have to, you know, chance it and bring my stuff over there.
Mm-hmm. Next question is, do you feel like people appreciate and are aware of all the time you donate to Derby? That's probably a maybe.
I definitely think people appreciate it when you're there taking the pictures. I don't think they appreciate the time.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is more so Lewis, not me, because he takes way more pictures than I do. The time it takes to process all those pictures and then edit them and then post them on social media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I think that's just photography in general. People underestimate. You
know,
they think you just snap a picture and
that's
it. Your job's done. And it's not. It's way more work than that.
You're absolutely right that photography in general, people realize the time that you're there taking pictures, and they don't realize the 2 or 3 times as much time it actually takes you to actually do something with the pictures once you get back to your studio.
What can leagues do to help their photographers feel more appreciated, since you're both photographers? What would you think would help leagues feel more, you know, happy about something we can do, you know?
I mean, there's, I don't want to say some of these things. I don't know if paying people for their time is an option. Nobody pays anybody in Derby.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you just practically throw thousands and thousands of dollars away in photographs every year. But, I mean, you don't do it for the money. You never have done it for the money. I don't know. It's tough.
Would food at Bouts help? I mean, would
t-shirts.
Something like that help? T-shirts?
T-shirts.
I mean, honestly, if
and,
it's the
and,
little
and,
things,
and,
it's the little things.
And some teams have.
And,
I mean,
and,
he's
yeah.
been given
yeah.
awards,
and
like
so,
little trophies
so,
at the end of the year,
yeah, I mean,
certificates.
I mean, teams like teams that we shoot for, like Palmetto and Cape Fear and other teams, have been very generous with, you know, food, T-shirts, you know, buying drinks afterwards. You know, it's
over. Wait, no one bought me a drink afterwards. What the heck, Lewis?
What in the actual hell?
What?
It's, you know, that, so it's wonderful and appreciated and great.
No, it's not appreciated if I'm not getting a drink.
I think more on a on like structural or systematic things that can be done. Definitely, if a team is using pictures from a photographer, figure out what compensation the photographer wants for that. If it's credit, well, it's going to be at least credit.
Yes.
At least.
Absolutely.
Definitely do that all the time. If it's something
ask
else.
Ask permission. I guess that's the biggest thing.
Right. I mean, if it's something else, basically work with the photographer and figure out what they're comfortable with. I think also having some type of acknowledgement is not the right word, some type of formal relationship helps, especially some type of formal relationship with photographers does help, in that it if you have a formal relationship with some photographers, who you know are trustworthy and you know are going to do a good job and are going to be reliable, you can actually screen out the photographers who are not going to do a good job, or you can't trust, or the ones that just show up and you've never seen before.
Yes.
And so if you say, you know, here are approved photographers, and you have, either verbal or some other agreements with them, and Joe Schmo, who shows up with a camera at the bout, you can say, well, you know, we have our official photographers. Thank you, but, You can apply to be one.
Yeah.
And that, I think, would help with the previous question of people, you know, trying to get shots of Derby for other reasons.
For creepy reasons.
Exactly.
We have, Carolina has press passes that we ask people to fill out.
Right. Charlotte.
Yeah, and it's, I think it's done well, because then we say, hey, we would like to see what you've done.
Exactly.
We're not saying we're going to claim anything. We just want to see it, just in case, because we like to control our image. And and I'm very lucky, and people ask me all the time about my blog. They're like, what is your number one suggestion for Derby blogging? I said, make friends with photographers, because they're the ones, if you have something you want to illustrate, They're the ones that have probably the best library to choose from.
Right.
Yeah, and back, I'm trying to think. I've been shooting Carolina bouts for about 9 years, and I remember when Carolina first went to that media pass
mm-hmm.
system. I was like, but
I liked it. I felt official.
Well,
I think I still have some of mine.
That was an when I realized I just couldn't bring my camera in and shoot. I was feeling kind of annoyed by that. But then I also
he has delusions of grandeur. He can't help himself.
once I went through the process and got approved, I'm like, oh, okay, I understand the reason for this, and I'm okay with it. But they had to sort of vet me and figure out, okay, this guy's okay. And since then, they knew who I am.
We love you guys.
Everybody knows
we love you guys. There's
in retrospect, it's great. But the first time I ran into it,
it's a little prickly.
What the hell was this?
Yeah, no, it wasn't you. Trust me, it wasn't you guys. Mm.
I think it's a good system.
It's a creepers.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Next question is Jeremy Johnson. How many do you have, and how big are your hard drives?
It's like lenses, right?
Yes, yeah. Right. So how big is that hard drive?
Yeah, everyone wants to know that. hard drives. Let's see. I've got about 10 terabytes of hard drive space in the office.
I can't even imagine what that is for. Like that's a lot.
It's the size of the office.
Well, yeah. it's probably about 4 or 5 terabytes are actual real archives, and then probably the other half are backups of those archives.
Interesting. Do you just share his?
I give mine to him.
Okay.
I'm like, here you go.
Here you go.
Because I can never find my stuff.
That is true. He's more organized than you are.
I'm the archivist.
It's kind of funny. Yep.
Yeah.
That's his job. He's the archivist.
You know, I'm no one's asked this, but that's actually something that I realized, about a year or two into derby shooting, is that I had to have some good way of cataloging photos.
Right.
And so I came up with a file naming convention where if you take a look at my photos anywhere, it has a date on it and a number.
Yep.
So if you ask me for a copy of a photo, I'm going to ask you, what's the file name?
Mm-hmm.
And so if, you tell me the file name.
LK blah blah.
LK
something.
2015.
So we have LKLE and
mm-hmm.
I guess now we have
EK. And so I can and so using that, I can go exactly. I know exactly where to find it.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, people would say, oh, it's a photo from so and such and such about. I'm like, yeah,
no.
I mean, there was 500 photos from that bout. No. So.
All right. Next question. Mecca again. Mecca has two more questions.
Mm-hmm.
She has, the first one is, how many thousands of photos do you think you've taken of Derby? Just a rough guesstimate.
Must be close to 1 million between the two of us?
Yeah.
I would think it is.
There's, I would say
not that
probably
we edited,
in the or well we can actually I'm a teacher, you're a teacher, we can figure this out. So we've been doing about,
I'm an art teacher, so I'm gonna look at the big
okay.
picture. Almost 1 million.
Okay. So in physics we call this a Fermi problem. So we're back in the envelope calculation. So,
did you hear that? That's
God.
Like people falling asleep.
Yeah,
by
it
their
is.
List.
It really
stop.
Is.
Stop now.
Stop. Don't ruin my podcast.
We've been doing this for 9 years.
You're going to go through this and you're going to go, oh, it's
about
1 million.
No, well, it may be. We'll find out. And so.
And we'll get back to you
about
that.
9 years. And we've been shooting about, or I've been shooting about 50 bouts per year.
I'm sorry, everyone who just can't help himself.
Exactly. So that's about 450 bouts total. And. At least so about 1,000 photos per bout ish. So what's 450 times 1,000? 450,000, 500,000.
No, but then you're not taking into consideration all the practices and all the scrimmages.
That's
and
true.
All the other
okay.
things. Boom, 1 million.
1 million.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Lewis is going to bed now.
Or he's going to drink another beer. All right, next question. Crank says, have you ever caught an injury right before it happens or right when it happened?
Yeah.
How do you feel about those? I mean, we sort of talked about it, but how do you feel when you see it? You're like, oh, crap. Like, do you realize it as it's happening, or do you have to, like, click back and look at it?
Usually you don't realize, when you click,
mm-hmm.
you don't quite realize what's
the exact
happened
second.
Then.
Okay.
When the person doesn't get up from that hit, you
then
say,
like, oh, crap.
And you sort of go back through the photos and say, oh no, that's what happened. Oh no. Yeah. And then you basically go into, okay, flag that one. And, you know, afterwards you send it to the person and say, you know, what do you want me to do with this?
Yeah. Do you ever see stuff on your, like, just not even talking about injuries, but you see someone's ankle go do something weird, or, and you're like, that's gotta be an injury.
Oh,
and then they're not. And you're like, wait.
You have that picture of Megan Eubank.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say Megan Eubank, definitely with her ankles up there.
Megan has Gumby ankles.
Yeah.
And another one, this is Stephanie Maney from the last playoffs.
I love Stephanie Maney.
I've got a photograph of her with her ankle is just going like at a right angle.
Yes.
And that's fine. She just keeps on going. Ankles especially, because, you know, skaters' ankles are often going off at odd angles, and it.
I don't know
fine.
Though. If my ankles were in the same position, mine would be broken.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's people with flexible angles.
Right.
Ankles.
I am.
The Gumby of the world.
My ankles do this thing where at PT the guy bent them. I know.
I need a gas mask. Oh my god.
I was like, oh dear god, it's over there too. Anyway, my ankles do this thing where they bend so much that my PT was like. Practically throwing up when he's
like,
so I do think it's because you've injured your ankle so many times that you've stretched the tendon, and that's what happens. So,
yeah,
gross but true. All right, John McBrayer says, is it helpful or restricted to have the doom boxes? I've never heard it called a doom box. I think he means a photography box.
Photographer box.
Yeah, inside track, the tape boxes, or if you're inside, be here during the action so refs don't run you over.
Mm-hmm. If it's in the right spot. Yes.
Okay, what's the right spot?
That's a great question.
Because I don't know. We just kind of like, I think we might randomly put it down.
Often teams randomly put it somewhere.
If it's too close to the edge, you're going to have, somebody's going to hit you. Then the refs. And they're not watching where you are. They're watching the game, which is good.
They should be doing, right?
Right.
Right. It's actually, I think a lot of people who don't photograph, and you know, the people who are laying out the tracks think, oh, if I get it closer to the edge, that's good for the photographers. And I can only speak for me, but actually, if it's a little bit back, maybe, you know, I would actually prefer having a big area for the NSOs and photographers, like, in the middle.
Okay.
I'd prefer that. It'd be safer for me. And also, with the lenses that I have, I can, you know, I'm fine with being a little bit further back.
Right.
And I don't have to be up close. And the closer you are to, like, you know, the closer you are to the middle of the turn over there, the more you've got reps going by you, and the more they have to look out for you, which isn't good for the game, and the more you have to look out for them, which isn't good for your photos.
Right.
As someone who's refed, I've never looked out for the photographer.
Oh,
so.
That's terrible.
I know. But I mean, I have an idea of where that box is, so I don't skate where I think the box is.
I mean, and I've seen refs who go out of their way to, like, try to duck when they go in front of me, and I tell them, don't do that. You do your job. I'll shoot around you.
They can duck in front of me. That would be great.
Yeah, because they're more important than I am to the game.
Yeah, because they're there for the safety. I mean, and it sucks if they ruin your shot, because I've seen, like I said, every once in a while, photographers will post the pictures that the refs have, you know, inadvertently ruined, and they're always hilarious, because it's always like, and this is where so-and-so jumped the apex, but there's a ref's butt right there.
Did a 360.
Yeah, you just see like a foot, and then a ref's butt, and you're like, okay.
Exactly. You know, the we keep talking about getting a gallery of just ref butt shots, because we all have zillions of them.
I think it'd be funny.
Would that fit into the creepy stalky kind of thing, though?
No, because that's just funny. It's just funny, though.
Yeah.
It would just be funny to me. All right, next question. I thought this was a good one, because we've both played on teams that aren't our teams.
Right.
So this is a...
Every team I play for is my team.
Yeah.
Mm.
Okay. But I was saying, we both play for the pickup team, the Hurricanes.
Right.
We've played for team... What was it? Derby, Dirty Fun? What do we go on? I don't know.
I'm a derby whore. I'll play for anyone.
Yeah, exactly. And it says, curious, how does your league handle, or what rules does your league have about skaters playing for other teams and leagues in and out of your own city during your active season?
We don't have any rules.
Mm-hmm.
But we are not playing Division I or Division II.
Right.
So the consequences, if we get hurt playing those games... would not be as severe as it would be for someone who is playing Division I or Division II teams. You know, you can't lose a player because it would be very frustrating to lose a player that you need the week before you're supposed to play someone.
I know that there are some teams that forbid their all-stars from playing on pickup teams that aren't like state pickup teams or things of that sort. And
I know Gotham thought for a while, I know this was in the wind, the derby wind, or the grapevine, that they were considering not letting their all-stars play on things like Team USA.
Right, exactly.
And
that I think is a little bit extreme.
I think it's very extreme.
Because Team USA is I mean, if anyone is at the level of Gotham, it's Team USA.
Right.
And so I think that would be good for everyone. You know, I've known other teams that they have to get their board approval before they go.
Mm-hmm.
And so
the captain's approval.
I mean,
so
that's really good sense.
That's just
I wouldn't just do it. Just people ask.
Right.
I don't have a problem with it if it had interfered in any way with a practice or an event that Carolina was having, and I'm the all-star captain, which I was all this last year, I would have a problem with it.
Right.
That would piss me off. Mm-hmm. But if it didn't interfere, I'd be like, look, don't get hurt. You know, take your time. Don't go balls out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, think about who you're playing against, because some teams aren't at the level. So we're D2 and we're creeping up to being an actual D2s. I don't really want to risk it very much, but if I trust the people I'm playing with and against, I don't really have a problem with it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now I'm on Team NC.
Mm-hmm.
I've played for the Hurricanes. I've played in pickup teams. I've played for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really see a problem with it as long as you're safe.
Yeah.
You know, and you're very communicative with your training group.
And I play for a small team. So it's for me. I think I learned more from going and playing with other teams than if I just stayed at home and just played with our team.
Yeah, and this really has become, I think, only an issue now. It used to not be an issue at all because there were lots of small teams around here, and pickup teams like the Hurricanes and stuff like that were a great way for the best skaters to get to skate with a group of other really good skaters and improve their game. But now I think it is a bit more of an issue than it used to be.
Well, Carolina, for a while, I mean, when I started skating with the Hurricanes or going to Invitationals, I mean, Carolina was like, don't do it. I mean, I got a lot of crap for going and doing that kind of thing. And
were
I was
you afraid
like,
you were
going
to get hurt?
No, I think they just didn't like it. I mean, it just was like, well, don't. Why would you want to skate outside of your league? It was very elitist kind of thing.
Well, that's the wrong.
Yeah, I was always like, well, because I'm not getting enough playtime, I'm new, and I need to get as much experience
as
possible.
That's a great reason to want to go skate as much as you can other places with other skaters.
Right, just so I learned. And I think I learned a lot because you can't just rely on what your league does.
Right.
You know, or I know how this person
always
plays.
Well, you
become
a more versatile player if you're exposed to different styles.
And I felt like it helped me a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really excited that I could do it. You know, but I can understand if it interferes with the league itself, anything the league is doing at the time, if they're skipping practices to do, I mean, not one practice, but like a lot of practices, or there's a very key game coming up. Those are the things that I think would interfere.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But otherwise, no, I don't see it as a big problem.
Yeah. I mean, I'll actually bring it back to photography and, you know, going around and photographing different teams, helps make me a better photographer.
Right.
So,
because you don't know what's going to happen, you don't necessarily know the players as well.
Exactly. And so I have to be on top of my game more shooting a team I don't know than shooting a team that I'm interested in. That I know all about.
That you follow.
And that I know. Okay, so and so when they get around here, they do this. And so click, there it goes. Got it. Yeah. Okay. It's. I can get great shots, but it's not as challenging as going and saying, I have no idea what's going to happen.
That's a good and a bad thing, though. I mean, it's good that you know where things are going to happen, so it's easier to photograph.
Right.
But I think it's fun to not know as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, good question. But I thought that was interesting because you're going to see it more and more because you have teams like Team NC, Team South Carolina, you got Team PA All-Stars, you know, who have a different thing going on. I mean, they competed in the USARS thing, and they came in, I think, third, I want to say.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they did really well. So you're going to see it more because people want more experience outside of what their league can give them sometimes, and that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question. This is an ongoing question we have from last week, and it's interesting. Lisa Hagen, she said, I think you should do a whole series of these questions on strategy. And so this week's question is, if you're in a power jam, what should you consider when deciding between passive offense versus active offense?
The photographer wants active offense.
Well, of course you want active offense. You don't get to talk now.
Why? You're just going to take pictures of the jammer.
Burn!
Okay, I'm just going to get another beer.
Okay. I think it depends on the jammer. If you've got someone that's strong that can push the pack away from your defensive line, then don't do anything.
Well,
if your jammer needs help, then you need to do something.
Well, here's what I think. Okay, so are there four opposing blockers out there? Is there a full wall, right? If it's a full wall, you need to do something, because I don't care how good your jammer is. There's 30 seconds at the most on a power jam, and you need to do something. Maybe it's a hit it and quit it. Maybe it's a dedicated offensive blocker. Maybe you try to break the pack. One of those things. So you've got to figure that out. And you're saying, I think you're right about if your jammer is a strong jammer, maybe you only do a hit it and quit it, and they get the pack moving, and they push that wall out.
The worst thing that I see people do is everybody runs, and then everybody's just moving further and further forward, and you're just skating around as a pack, and the jammer's not getting anywhere.
Right. That's very frustrating as a jammer, and I don't jam often, but when that happens, I'm like, stop!
Right.
You know,
but at that point, you can't stop, because you can't stop.
Right.
The speed of the
I took a class from Smarty Pants, and she said you got to use your jammer voice at that point and tell them to draw. I mean, she said it just like that, and I was like, you know what? I've seen her make that face on the track
like
and take that picture with the drop. And it's true. I mean, and people get overzealous. I think the reason that originally offense disappeared, there's two reasons. One is it caused a lot of penalties.
Right.
Like, too many penalties. And two, people forget that there's a jammer coming from the others, and it's going to happen,
right?
Because especially with a 30-second power jam, it's not like it used to be where it was a minute.
Right.
Oh, dear Lord, was that boring.
You have to get ready for that jammer coming.
Right.
And you have to get yourself set. So
jammer laps are around 9 seconds, average. There are some that are faster, there's some that are slower, but you've got 9 seconds once they leave or come around. So you don't have a lot of time to mess around. So hit
and
it and quit it.
That's... you know your team the best.
It
depends on who's on the defensive line as well. If you don't have strong people that you know that can clear the line, then they're not going to help either.
No, they're just going to get in the way.
Right.
Yeah.
So
I think the worst thing in the world, though, is when you have a jammer and you know that they're very pushy, but they're also very penalty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel like that ups the stakes for offense like crazy. Because all of a sudden you're like, I better do offense. Because she's going to go to the box.
Yeah.
Right.
She's going to hit that wall, whether it's legal or not. Someone, you know, it's going to be a pretty violent hit. Someone's going to go
down. You're
not
talking about someone from your team, are you?
No. No.
I think so.
No, of course not.
And, you know, so you have to clear for them. And that's the best way to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion.
And that's great. I mean that's something that, as a player, you have to think about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's
well, actually, as a team,
awesome.
You have to know your
team
dynamic to know
exactly and that's,
how that works best for you.
That's a challenge, and that's awesome.
Well, and I think it's funny that so you're doing the offense from the back generally because it's a power jam. And I will literally point at one of my players and go, she's your offense, right? And even though the other team hears me, there's not anything they can do about it.
What do you mean by that? Tell the audience what we mean.
Okay, so
that.
The wall is in front
you
of me.
You tell the other photographers, because all the Derby girls know.
No,
right?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
So there's four of us in the back, and we're lined up probably 2 and 2
right.
to give our jammer a room
right.
to go. And I will point to one of my blockers, because I don't like playing this kind of offense. Just don't.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I get penalized a lot. So I'm like, nope. I'll point to someone that's very effective at it and be like, she is your offense, and they will follow her.
Okay.
Whatever she needs to do, either they will set up so she can make a pick, or she's just going to blast through the wall herself and they'll follow behind her, whatever
gotcha.
The case is.
Gotcha.
But the point is, I don't care if the other team knows that's happening, because it's
mm-hmm.
really hard to fight off offense and a jammer.
Sometimes that works as a strategy too.
Yep.
I mean, I've played it where they expect it to be me, and
mm-hmm.
so I'll take a step, and
yep.
three people run at me, and it just opens up a big hole.
Exactly.
We typically decide these things before we go
exactly.
on the floor.
That's one of those things where strategy and knowing your team is necessary.
The only time it falls apart maybe is those people go to the penalty box.
Well,
in which
yes.
case, what do?
Right.
Passive works. Just push, jammer, push.
Push, jammer. Go give birth.
You see all the photographers on the side going, oh.
But I mean, I don't
know. Wanna... I think the jammer pushing against four people is pretty exciting to take a picture of.
I don't want to ever leave my jammer out there just because I'm afraid that longer they're out there, the more tired they get. I mean, because it's not endurance, it's stamina at that point. And if they have a really hard time with it, they're probably going to get penalty heavy. They're going to use a forearm, they're going to back block, they're going to do something silly. And so try not to do that to them.
It was interesting at playoffs where you had, where I saw some amazing top-notch defenses, just some amazing defenses. Mm-hmm. And to see, and you know, you had both jammers out there and on the track. And so the defenses were, there was four blockers, you know, doing their best to keep this one jammer through. And so basically you had these two scrums of people, a jammer and four blockers. And that was really interesting to see, where you had teams that were both at that level and both able to do it that well.
That's when, I mean, we call it back in the day, so back in 2013, 2014, I would call that a Gotham, Texas game, because that's basically how their games would look. So you'd have a Gotham pack and a Texas pack. And that was one of our goals in Carolina, is to be able to do that, to replicate that, to be a Gotham, Texas pack. And it really, that idea helped us get better at our blocking and got our jammers used to pushing.
Right.
So before, because they would be like, what is this? You know, either I get through or not. And it took a while to get our brains wrapped around the whole, like, you're going to be there for a hot minute or two.
Mm-hmm. It was you know, amazing to see, you know, a defense like London's or Jacksonville or
Victoria.
Something like that.
I like their defense.
You know, I hate Victoria's defense. Oh, my God, I hate that defense.
But,
I know.
But
people
it
love
was
it.
Like, it was like this.
So tight.
This,
that's what I was about.
It was like this amoeba, almost. Mm-hmm. That
you push on one side and
you push on one side, someone else recycles around to the other side, and it never actually breaks. It just sort of
amoebates.
Yeah. Now it also one of the cool things, again from the photographer's point of view, was I don't think I've ever seen as many apex jumps as I did at the playoffs this year.
Because there's no other way to get around.
That's right. You have to fly over them.
Exactly.
To get around.
Exactly. And so the skaters who are able to do that, you know, they come flying in into the turn, and you've got this pack of four jammers there, or four blockers there, and they're like, heck with that. I'm going to jump the apex.
Now,
and
I love it when jammers jump the apex, because I will lay them out.
And, you know, as a photographer, I'm like, yeah.
As a blocker, I'm like, yeah, jump that apex, because
so
I love it.
We both like that. That's great.
I definitely, I think, I tell people, I'm like, look, if I'm sitting on the inside line with our league especially, I'm like, don't jump the apex. I know, they are slowly creeping into my lap. Mm. Anyway, we're almost done with tonight. We have a shout-out.
Shout out.
This episode is brought to you by Double Deuce Tattoo and Art Gallery. If you're interested in tattoos, piercing, or local artist artwork, you should check out Double Deuce. They are located in Northwoods Shopping Center off of Harrison Avenue in Cary, North Carolina.
Cary, okay.
Yep. They have friendly and experienced staff, state inspected and approved sterility equipment, and even art created by local artists for sale, not to mention 100% of all art sales go to the local artists, which is pretty cool. Swing by or even send them a consultation request online. You can do that online. That's awesome, because sometimes I have to go into the tattoo shop, and I am a totally not personable person, and I hate talking to people. Shocking, I know. And so having an online consult kind of is cool, that you don't have to talk to them for real. Okay. All right, check out their website by visiting doubledeucetattoo.com, Google Double Deuce Tattoo, or click the link, and I'll put the link in my description of the podcast. And Double Deuce Tattoo and Art Gallery, they're just like any other tattoo shop, only better.
Oh,
so you guys are getting tattoos soon again, right?
Yeah, for our next tattoo, we'll have to check them out.
Yeah, sounds great.
Definitely.
Well, thank you guys. Thanks for being on the show. I know that Mouse ran away and left us, but the dog stayed, which is awesome, right?
Most of the time it was awesome.
Yeah, most of the time.
Captain Farty Pants over there.
They're really stinky.
They're about to get thrown outside.
Aw. And thank you so much. And if you have any follow-up questions, please hit me up on Facebook, and I will pass it along to Tsunami and Punk.
Sounds great.
And awesome. You've wasted another hour listening to Q's Tips. I hope you enjoyed it. Thanks so much, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.